Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. We're going to catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, if you can hear some enthusiasm in my voice, that's a little bit more than normal. That's because we are actually on our way to Indianapolis today. My wife and I and our dog, Brandy, are in the car driving to Amarillo today. That's where we'll spend tonight. On our way to Indianapolis to go to Carb Day and the 109th running of the Indianapolis 500. So I'm recording my show on Saturday. Actually, been watching the qualifications for Formula One and the qualifications at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So I'll have some updates from at least what I know today. So we're going to catch you up on what's happening in Indianapolis. We'll catch you up on what's going on in NASCAR. Got a great article out of AZ Central regarding Mario Andretti and his love for Phoenix. Of course, we'll talk about some weird and unusual automotive news, and it wouldn't be The Car Show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on The Car Show. Well, from AZ Central, the headline reads, racing legend Mario Andretti hopes IndyCar Series returns to Phoenix. Now 85, where the royalty of racing has watched Phoenix and the surrounding areas sprout and turn into his home, away from home. And boy, do I like me some Mario Andretti. Well, for the past 60 years, Mario Andretti has carried on a torrid love affair. Okay, although his family knows all about it, it's not really a secret. The most famous race car driver in motorsports history has always been true to his heart's longtime desire because she has been faithful to him. She isn't a person, but a place, specifically the one-mile oval in Avondale called Phoenix Raceway, but it will ever be known as Phoenix International Raceway to Andretti. Quote, I love Phoenix, Arizona, because I've been here since the 60s, Andretti beamed as he spoke to Arizona Republic on April 29th during the grand opening of his newest Andretti Indoor Karting and Game Centers in Glendale. It was 1964 when I first started driving and testing Indy cars at PIR. The fact that the team I drove for was based out of Phoenix. It's been a home away from home, so to speak, for years. Mario Andretti, now 85, looking spry like really a 55-year-old as he helped indoctrinate Phoenix IndyCar racing to the area back in 1964. Racing for the famous Dean Van Lines, he started third on the grid and finished in 18th, but it was just the beginning of an incredible career that has him standing as the only driver in motorsports history to win the Daytona 500, 1967, the Indianapolis 500, 1969, and the Formula One World Championship in 1978. IndyCar racing, well, that's where he became royalty, and Arizona had a lot to do with it. Quote, I used to be here sometimes for 6 weeks after the season was over, doing testing and development because the weather was always good here. So we used to do Firestone tire testing for Indianapolis, do a lot of testing for the constructors and the compounds because of the characteristics it had here. It's only a mile track at PIR, but all the same factors we need. Very appropriate here, and the weather, well, it was always with us. IndyCar racing has always been good to Mario, who retired as a four-time series champion, 65, 66, 69, and then in 1984. The all-time leader in career race starts at 407 IndyCar starts. Pole positions, 67. Total laps led, 7,595. Wire-to-wire victories, 14. And second in all-time career wins at 52. Now, four of those wins came right here in Arizona, including PIR's featured event in 1993 when Andretti was 53 years old. He became the oldest driver to win an IndyCar race, a record that still stands today. That victory also made him the only person to ever win an IndyCar race in four decades. So Mario says with a shrug, yeah, 53. I was kind of pushing it, but I think pushing it and being active that age, you know, I always feared not being competitive in the last few years of my career, but I just couldn't give it up. At least I know I won at that age. I wasn't an also-ran, and that was rewarding indeed. Now, so is opening his latest indoor karting facility on 99th Avenue, just west of State Farm Stadium, the second in the Valley following one they started. They opened in Chandler last year, and one of several planned across the U.S., and another one is planned for Scottsdale. "We are very proud of it," Andretti said during the grand opening of the Glendale location. "This sold something very special for me and my family. It's been a great day for us." Mostly because it's probably a lifelong love affair with Phoenix and Avondale and the Valley and just Arizona in general. Andretti was here before we had any professional sports teams. Back in 1964, in many ways, this was considered a cow town, mostly dry and dusty place known for its abundant farmland and cotton fields on the west side. "Well, quote, not as many now," Andretti said, who has 42 career starts at Phoenix, the most top fives at 22, the most top 10 finishes at 30. "It's just been amazing. I've seen this entire area just sprawl and grow in such a beautiful way. Now you've got everything. You come here and it's like another home for me. Truly, that's the way I feel." Now, racing has long been a hotbed of in the entire Southwest. For Phoenix, well, be it IndyCar, NASCAR, dirt track racing, drag strips, and for even a minute, for 3 years actually, Formula One was here in Phoenix. But nothing lasts forever, including the IndyCar series, which was such a hit in the good old days, thanks to drivers such as A.J. Foyt, and the Andretti's, and the Unser's, and Rick Mears, Nigel Mansell, Johnny Rutherford, Bobby Rahal, Emerson Fittipaldi, and there's so many more. Now, Mario blames the 1996 split between the IRL, the Indy Racing League, and CART, the Championship Auto Racing Team, for ultimately dooming the sport. Specifically in the Valley, the series was abandoned for an 11-year stretch, briefly resurfaced for a 3-year run, 2016 to 2018. "Well, I have to think that there's a political side to our discipline. We suffered tremendously," Andretti said. "There was a real division between Indianapolis and the IRL and the CART group. CART really brought IndyCars racing to the highest level. But by dividing it, I'm sorry, it cost a lot of careers and almost took the series to its knees. Obviously, we've come back tremendously, and right now, we've got a great product, and it's really coming back." Poor attendance and dwindling television ratings ultimately led to Indy's downfall in the Valley. Andretti said politics, again, might be to blame. As well as the sport's ultimate ambassador, however, he would fight tooth and nail to bring IndyCar back to the Phoenix area. This is his love of loves. "Well, I would support it 100% for sure. I mean, wouldn't I? Why? It's just more than just me. We've got to get back to racing, I tell you. From a fan standpoint, it's some of the greatest entertainment out there is the IndyCar series. There is a real depth of talent that is unprecedented, in my opinion." Yep. And actually, it was even a little bit better. And he said, "Yeah, you can go deep in the field, and there are so many teams that have an opportunity to win. I think you'd be really entertained. If it only would return to the Phoenix area, Mario Andretti's longtime mistress would only be fitting." So Mario Andretti opening a brand new karting facility here, which I have not got a chance to go check out, which I will. And Mario Andretti, my hero, the winner of the first race I ever went to in 1969. I'm looking at a picture of this man who is 85 years old, and he looks like he's 65 years old. So congratulations to the ambassador of IndyCar and motorsports, Mario Andretti. Once again, the biggest story of this weekend, or this coming weekend, when you have over Memorial Day, you have three of the greatest series all running on the same time. So we have the Formula One race from Monaco, and that is going to be the first race of next weekend, not this weekend, next weekend, followed by the Indianapolis 500, and then the head to Charlotte for the Coca-Cola 600. And the article today from Racer Magazine says, Larson heading into Indy Charlotte double as the NASCAR points leader again. Well, NASCAR Cup Series Championship point leader is heading to Indianapolis. Kyle Larson begins his 2 weeks of NASCAR and Indianapolis 500 activity with practice and qualifications, and it might be a small detail, but he doesn't want to overlook the fact that he is now the championship leader in NASCAR. He, quote, "I think it's really cool, and I think it's good for our team, and it's good for the sport, and it's good for racing in the Cup to be the Cup Series leader competing in the Indy 500 for a second year in a row. I would say last year was a goal of mine. This year, I really don't think about it. I always want to put a spotlight and put a spotlight for our sport of motorsports." Now, Larson was NASCAR championship point leader in 2024 when he ran with Arrow McLaren at his Indianapolis debut. Unfortunately, the double never materialized because of severe weather and the delayed start of the Indianapolis 500. And then that moved back everything. And by the time he got to Charlotte after the rain delay, that track and that event was in a rain delay as well. Now, missing the race dropped Larson to third in the standings, but 2 weeks later, he was back at the top of the grid after winning the Sonoma race. Well, last weekend, he scored the max points at Kansas Speedway. He led the most laps. He scored as many points as is possible to win. And this weekend, he will be the points leader going into North Wilkesbury, which is the all-star race, which is a non-points race. So he's going to be going back and forth between Indianapolis and North Wilkesboro. And then next week, he'll be going back and forth between Indianapolis and Charlotte. Quote, I do really think it's cool. And yeah, we had a great day at points in Kansas. I look forward to the next couple weeks actually getting to race in the Coca-Cola 600 and having the lead in that one as well. So Kyle Larson attempting to do the double again for the second year in a row. And again, he is going into the Indy 500 as the points leader in NASCAR. Well, the headline from yesterday, another crash at Indy for Larson. Well, NASCAR star Kyle Larson crashed for the second time at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. The 2021 Cup champion was uninjured in a turn three where his number 17 Arrow McLaren Hendrix Motorsport Chevrolet turned, had more grip on the front end of the car than he expected. He lost the rear end. The crash following a spin and crash in turn one that he did in April in the open test. Quote, yeah, I'm okay. I had a lot of front grip in three, and I just felt it come around. And it came back, coming around much quicker than I thought. So, yeah, it's a bummer. It's kind of what I did in the test on turn one, and I backed it in there. But we'll be fine. So we'll see what happens as Kyle Larson crashes in practice yesterday. And right now, as I'm doing the show on Saturday morning, qualifying for the greatest spectacle in racing, the Indy 500, is going on right now. Well, from the pages of Racer, the headline reads, Indy 500 ticket sellout lifts the local TV blackout. Well, the IndyCar series and its marquee event, the Indianapolis 500, has delivered with a welcome and anticipated sellout of tickets, which has resulted in the lifting of the local blackout on network television. All reserved seats for the May race will be sold out for the first time since the legendary 100th edition of the race in 2016. According to a statement from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, right now a select few seats remain in the IMS grandstands with fully reserved seats sellout likely to occur by the checkered flag for Monday's practice or even possibly this weekend. Fans who would like a reserved seat for the event are encouraged to visit the IMS.com website before it's too late. In tandem to this historic update, event organizers have lifted the local broadcast delay of the race. Expanded coverage of the very first Indy 500 on Fox starts on Sunday, May 25th at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time across the country with a green flag set to wave at 12:45 Eastern Standard Time. While general admission tickets will still be available for the IMS infield throughout the race day, the massive grandstands around the 116-year-old 2.5-mile oval and all hospitality suites will be completely filled. Indianapolis Motor Speedway is the world's largest spectator sporting facility. The Indy 500 is annually the largest spectator sport event on the planet, hosting a crowd of approximately 350,000 people. IMS President Doug Bowles was elated to share the news. Quote, the very best fans in sports have delivered a historic and fitting fashion for an incredible stars of the IndyCar series. Bowles said, the sheer size and scale of this crowd is going to be massive. It will offer an epic backdrop for the first Indy 500 on Fox. The 109th running of the Indianapolis 500 will be a full-scale, nonstop spectacle that draws the eyes of the world to Speedway, Indiana. Well, Formula One this weekend is in Italy for the running of the Imola Grand Prix. And of course, my McLaren boys, you got to love it. Oscar Piastri is going to start on the pole. And always very excited when McLaren can be on the front row. Of course, Mad Max Verstappen will start on the outside of the front row. Second row, George Russell and Lando Norris. So we have McLaren 1 and 4. And this is a big one, Fernando Alonso running for Aston Martin and is going to start in fifth, and Carlos Sainz in sixth for Williams and Alexander Albon in seventh for Williams. Williams, for the last several years, has been a back marker. This year, they are making some huge gains. The big issue right now is Ferrari, Charles Leclerc, and Lewis Hamilton at home in Imola in Italy, starting 11th and 12th. Very, very surprising. And then Yuki Tsunoda, who is the replacement driver for the Red Bull Honda Racing team, crashed out in practice, in qualifying, and is going to start at the back of the field. So Yuki has struggled after Liam Lawson was replaced in the car after the first five races. So we'll see what happens with that. We'll have those results from Formula One in Italy for you next weekend. Well, certainly today's show is heavy motorsports related because of what's happening at Indianapolis qualifying for the race. Also, Formula One and NASCAR. NASCAR with his all-star race this weekend. But I found a really good article out of the AARP magazine, and it's titled Reliability on the Road: What to Consider When Looking for a Dependable Ride. Well, you're shopping for a new car or used car, and there's one buzzword that gets thrown around a lot. It's called reliability. Well, who doesn't want a reliable vehicle? Well, here's what to look for, according to the folks from J.D. Power and Consumer Reports. First, things to think about. Cars are better than they used to be. Ed Kim, who's the president and chief analyst for the research and consulting firm Auto Pacific, said the variable quality gaps have decreased and they're almost negligible now with modern cars. Today, whether you're buying a Ford, a Toyota, a Kia, or a Volkswagen, they're all likely to provide many years of trouble-free service. Now, according to Dave Sargent, vice president of global automotive at JD Power, he agrees that modern cars experience fewer mechanical breakdowns than other vehicles of previous generations based off his company's history of surveying car owners. New focus on technology. Well, that's what concerns drivers more than anything now. They report back to JD Power that their car technology. Well, the functions inside the car, are they easy to understand? Are they easy to use? Or are they annoying? As an example, Sargent said a car might get a poor reliability rating that uses a touch screen for its key functions instead of a physical button and dials. Stuff like that can be pretty infuriating to some people. I think the industry realized that they had gone slightly a bit too far. But the mechanical, well, that still matters. Consumer Reports reliability ratings focus on the likelihood and the severity of car problems. And that weighs a little higher than just maybe a squeak or a rattle. And that's according to Stephen Elk from Consumer Reports Auto Data Analytic Program Leader. In our parlance, a reliable car will have a lower overall problem rate than other vehicles of the same model year. Well, change isn't always necessarily good. With most reliable brands are the ones that stick to with what works and don't change too much. What always hurts automakers' reliability is when automakers introduce new technologies, things like new powertrains or new components. It typically takes a few model years for them to kind of work out the bugs and the kinks, and then sometimes they never do. The used car history. Well, according to Christina Bruins, the director of online car dealer Carvana, advises used car buyers to get a report from services such as Carfax, which compiles a service data and accident history on specific vehicles. AutoCheck, ClearVIN, and Bumper are other options. Car dealers and mechanics can also tap into a car's computers to get more information about the car's service as well as its mechanical issues. So yeah, the good news is right now, cars are more reliable than ever, and that's the good news. The other thing you need to do is, I always consider having a reliable mechanic to look at your used car purchase before you purchase it. Sometimes the dealerships don't want to do that because you're at the dealership. But in reality, you want a neutral third party to look at this car, not the people who are trying to sell it. And if you're also looking around at buying a car from a private party, you definitely want to make sure that you have an understanding of what the car has been and what its history is. So a Carfax report and a mechanic to look at your car before you purchase it are the two best things you can do to make sure you get the best value possible in buying a used car. Well, from the pages of the Weird and Unusual Automotive News, Dodge confirms electric Charger Daytona RT is dead as unsold cars pile up. Well, poor sales and the tariff situation have doomed the Dodge entry-level electric muscle car ahead of its six-cylinder arrival. Well, that didn't last long. Dodge has confirmed that the electric Charger base model RT trim level will not return for 2026 model year, leaving its only pricier Scat Pack version. The news comes out shortly after the brand announced massive incentives on the 2024 and 2025 models in a bid to clear the excess inventory, with a few leaks after the White House tariffs have made the Canadian-built coupe more expensive. Well, the production of the Dodge Charger RT is postponed for 2026 model year as we continue to assess the effects of the U.S. tariff policies, a company representative said. The spokesperson also confirmed that the Scat Pack will stick around on its own until the four-door model joins the lineup that the twin turbocharged 3-liter straight six-powered six-pack variant will land sometime during the second half of this year. Now, granted, the term postponed doesn't actually mean canceled, but there's no other word on when the RT will return, sooner or later or never, to the portfolio. Well, as dealers across the nation are sitting on an inventory of approximately 3,500 Dodge Charger RTs, according to enthusiast website Mopar Insiders, dealers have been extremely generous in their attempts to move these cars off their lots. A Florida car dealer is listing a new 2025 Dodge Charger RT with 5 miles on the odometer for a mere $34,184. That's nearly half manufacturer's suggested retail price. So deals are out there, and the reality is we don't know if this car is going to come back. Now, getting rid of the base trim is inevitably going to make the Charger more expensive in the future. That's the bad news. But when you factor in the fairly low demand for what has been hyped as the first electric muscle car, pricing pared down on the 2026 range hasn't been announced, but the 2025 RT carried a base price of almost $62,000 and a rather hefty $2,000 destination charge. The 2025 Scat Pack will cost almost $76,000, and that's not too far-fetched to assume that that six-pack will carry a lower manufacturer's suggested retail price through the White House tariffs. That won't maybe tilt that in their favor. And then a long-rumored V8-powered Charger that that Dodge has often alluded to stands in this mess is waiting to be seen. So the demand for this car just didn't materialize, and we'll see if it does in the future. Well, time to talk gas prices with our friends at AAA. Of course, getting ready to head cross-country on a big driving trip as we are. I'll be looking at gas prices across the country. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is $3.18 a gallon. Here in Arizona, $3.38. And as we cross the country, I'm going to kind of just draw a little line. So we're going to go through New Mexico. New Mexico's gas is at $2.97. Then we'll cross into Texas, where average gas price is $2.79 a gallon. We'll then cross into Oklahoma at $2.82. Then into Missouri at $2.87. Then into Illinois, which tends to have higher gas prices. Yeah, we go from $2.87 in Missouri to $3.38 in Illinois, and back to $3.19 a gallon in Indiana. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Metro Phoenix and in Arizona. We'll talk about gas prices here in the great state of Arizona. Right now, the least expensive gas you can get in the state is in Sierra Vista at $2.65 a gallon, and that's at multiple places, Circle K, 267 at another Circle K, Yuma, $2.69 at the pilot station, and Express Fuels at $2.69, and then Prescott jumping into the action at $2.69 as well at Costco. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in the Metro Phoenix area. All right, Metro gas prices right now, Costco on West McDowell Road in Avondale at $2.95. Several Sam's Clubs, most on the west side, at $2.99 a gallon. The Costco on 79th Avenue at $3.05. The Arco station on North 43rd Avenue, that's at 935 North 43rd Avenue, at $3.09 a gallon. So yeah, if you can get gas under probably $3.15 a gallon in Metro Phoenix, you found a good price. Well, we've reached that time. It's time for a little car talk. And the headline says, is Dad owed a long overdue apology for ruining his Buick? Dear Car Talk, I have had a question that's plagued me for decades. While I was in medical school in Buffalo, New York, I often drove home to Long Island to visit my parents during school breaks. One Christmas break, I drove home in a huge snowstorm. My dad's Buick Regal, which was an automatic, it took me more than 12 hours to get home. The amount of snow falling down from the sky was unbelievable. Now, being a careful driver, I put the car in second gear and drove all the way home in that gear, never going more than 40 miles an hour on the highway. When I got back, my dad was pretty upset and said, claiming that I ruined his car. Now, the car seemed to run fine after that trip. However, his comment has haunted me for decades. Did I indeed ruin his car? There was so much snow on the ground that I was afraid I was going to spin out. Do I owe my father an apology? I granted a long overdue one. I still enjoy listening to Car Talk on Apple Podcasts every week. And the new old episodes comes out. Oh, I love them. Thanks for all the great memories and all the laughs. And that's from Carol. Well, your dad probably thinks you owe him a transmission, not an apology. But Carol, you don't. Actually, you don't owe him either. You don't say what year your dad's Buick was, but let's say it was an 85, and that car had a 3-speed automatic transmission. So the car uses 3 gears to cover the top speed of 100 miles an hour range, and I have unfortunately or fortunately erased the 1985 Buick Regal transmission specs from my memory bank. So absolutely no idea, but I have no doubt that driving 40 miles an hour would have been well within the normal range of second gear. Now, had you been driving 80 miles an hour in second gear for 12 hours, yeah, you could have heated up the transmission by over-revving the engine. But driving 40 miles an hour did absolutely no damage whatsoever, Carol. And it speaks to your thoughtfulness and empathy, and probably about how good a doctor you are as well, that you've worried about this over decades. Now, you can forget about it. Actually, here's what you could do. Next Christmas, call a junkyard near where Dad lives. Tell him you need a transmission for an 85 Buick Regal. Pay for it, ask them to deliver it to his driveway, and ask him if you can include an apology card with it. And then you two can have a big laugh over that. So yeah, when I started reading this article at first, I was like, oh, did she do any damage? And I thought, 40 miles an hour in a snowstorm? No, she did absolutely no damage. And now she can go to bed with a clean conscience. And definitely driving in snowstorms is something you don't want to have to deal with. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.